Another Day in Paradise.
Okay.
Get to talk to movies. Get to talk about movies, and that's a fun thing to do.
You know, I do a lot of that.
Yeah.
In fact, I pretty much always do that. So, talking about movies is good. And are you a captain or an admiral, or what is your rank?
Well, my field rank of internet is admiral, but I have no actual rank.
Okay, well, you know what? I had a feeling.
Well,
there might be some career officers that are Criterion fans or art film fans, but not so many.
I am not one of them.
All right. Well, you guys are both new. I mean, you're not new. You've been on the planet a while, but you're new to this show, new to these listeners, or at least some of them. I'm sure have heard you elsewhere. Actually, one of them, probably the admiral, not at least not yet. So
yeah,
this is episode 17, Criterion Now, and we'll go in alphabetical order, and I'll introduce Jason Beamish. Did I pronounce that right?
You did.
All right. So Jason, welcome. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for inviting me.
And then we have Kyle Reardon, who you might have heard on Wrong Reel. You've been on a lot of episodes. I remember the Takashi Miike... the OJ episode, of course. And I know you did another one right before I did the Game of Thrones episode with James. I forget which one that was, but anyway, Kyle Reardon, welcome, Kyle.
Thank you for having me, Aaron. I've been waiting to get on this one, so I'm excited to be here.
We'd like to hear that.
Cool.
So the way we usually start off by talking about what we've been doing. So, and Jason, what have you been up to lately?
Well, I've been reviewing and writing and editing for filmruminations.com now for about 4 years, getting into podcasting and just making friends around that all watch movies and we could talk about it, and generally educating myself on the films that I'm watching.
That's a good way to do it. I guess we've been connected social media probably for a couple of years now. Maybe longer, but it's great to hear your voice and to podcasting is a good venture. I kind of enjoy it. So, and Kyle, what have you been up to?
I just finished up my first Kickstarter campaign on my first feature film. It went incredibly well. We got over our goal. That was $10,000.
Nice.
Now we're in that little weird lull with Kickstarter. You're stuck without the money for a couple weeks. So. Story retreats, excuse me, and I've just been doing my last final draft of my script and just finalizing everything before we go into the full hall of pre-production. So it's just been quite the process so far.
And that was Nowhere to Run, right?
Yes, Nowhere to Run. It's a film I've been working on for about a year now. I've also been working on a horror film. If you've heard myself on Wrong Reel at all, talked about the film Jeremy. Been developing that one for a couple of years now, but I got to the point with that one where I was like, I can't make it for the lowest budget possible, and the extent of the story, I just wasn't getting it conveyed to people to kind of back it, because it's a really out there film. But with Nowhere to Run, I can do it for nothing. The story is fun, and people really connected to it. And,
nice.
It was just really cool to see that happen. And just from, not my first choice of what I wanted to make, but something I'm still passionate about, to see it actually come to fruition, that was really nice.
But you can't start with Persona right out of the gates.
Exactly.
You got to make a few films before that. So you'll work your way up, and I'll put that link in the show notes to the campaign. That's actually amazing. I think Kickstarter, of course, a lot of projects get going on Kickstarter, but you'd be surprised a lot don't actually come to fruition. So just meeting your goal, I think, is a good accomplishment and a good first step. So we'll
that's really great.
Be following
Thank
along
you.
With that. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know how much you guys have listened to the show, but do you know Speed Round? Have you heard that?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, Speed Round is, we're probably not going to do it this show, but we're going to do it for another, what we call our dumb game, and we've only done a couple of these. We did the one with, really about villains, with James and Dave. And so this dumb game, well, we're going to start by playing the music, which is the same music from Speed Round. Here you go. So this game is called Art House or Fun House. So I'm going to give you a list of directors, and they kind of you know, walk the tightrope of being artsy or mainstream. And I want you just give me the first thought on the top of your head when you hear them. Are these guys art house or fun house? So, for example, if I said Ingmar Bergman, I think we'd all agree he is
fun house.
Okay,
well, that's a joke.
I was going to say art house.
Okay. He's art house.
No, it's definitely art house.
Yeah. So, okay, John Waters, and I'll go. Well, I'll alternate. Jason, John Waters, art house or fun house?
Art house.
Fart house. Okay, that's it.
No, art house.
Art house. All right, Kyle, you agree?
No, definitely fun house for me.
Okay. I would say fun house too, but Hitchcock, Kyle.
For me, art house.
Okay, Jason.
Fun house.
Okay. Jacques Tati, Jason.
Funhouse.
Okay. Kyle?
Our house.
Okay. I would actually, yeah, I would say Ty.
Yeah, you could go either way.
Akira Kurosawa. Kyle?
Art house.
Yeah.
Art house.
Yeah, that's a pretty easy one, art house. But, you know, his adaptations have been pretty fun house. Okay. All right. Wes Anderson. Jason?
Oh, that's a tie, but Funhouse, I guess, because I just enjoy it.
Okay, that's fair. Kyle?
I definitely go Funhouse with Wes Anderson.
Yeah, that's a tough one, because he definitely has art house sensibilities, but yeah, I think his vibe is more Funhouse. Charles Chaplin. I'm going to go to Jason first, because I know you have a podcast coming out about that. Chaplin, art house or Funhouse?
I got to say Funhouse.
All right, Kyle?
That's chuckles.
Yeah, I would agree, too.
Yeah, me too.
Funhouse.
All right, Samuel Fuller. Kyle?
Art house.
Okay. Jason?
Art house.
I'm going to say fun house. His vibe was anti-Hollywood, but he made genre. Whatever the frick he wanted to make. All right, Jean-Luc Godard. Jason?
Garbage house? Is that an option?
That's fair. That's an option with me. Kyle?
I guess our house with him. I think our house, yeah.
All right, Hal Ashby, Kyle.
I think fun house.
Okay. Jason, I almost called you Jeremy.
That's fine. I'll agree, fun house.
Yeah, I'm going to go art house, but his stuff is pretty accessible. Great stuff. I really like his stuff.
Right.
David Cronenberg. Jason?
Art house.
Okay. Kyle?
For me, fun house, but I, you know, I have a weird taste in movies, so...
so do we all. Yeah, I'm going to say early Cronenberg is fun house, and I'm going to say late Cronenberg is art house.
Yes, so, definitely.
Jacques Demy. Kyle?
Art house.
Okay. Jason?
I would agree with that. Art house.
Yeah, yeah, that's a tough one too. I'll agree with you both. Art house. All right, David Lynch, Jason.
Art house.
Okay, Kyle.
It's like, I don't know. That one's tough because I would say it's almost like an art house film if you put it in like a carnival fun house. Like literally, like if you did that, like I don't know.
Yeah.
I would say, I guess I'd go with our house. And with, like, most of these, too, it's, like, you can go either way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, even going back to Hitchcock, it's, like, you know, for me, his films are just pieces of, you know, art, like, amazing films. But they're so fun, too, like, and accessible to, like, just a normal public audience. It's, like,
yeah. You
can break them down either way. So, but with Lynch, I would have to say our house. Probably.
Same here, and of course Twin Peaks, you know, it's weird, but it's accessible weird, so I think his intent is art house, but he's managed to become fun house, you know, definitely accessible. So last one, Guillermo, I can never say his name right now. This L's.
Guillermo
del Toro. Kyle?
Fun house.
Yeah, Jason?
Fun house.
I'd say fun house, but his tastes are very art house. Well, mostly art house. So that's it. All right. What's funny is that was actually a game I recycled from the episode, the Lost episode, which we had Matt and Travis on. But when we did it with them, and you started to go there, Kyle, but they got really analytical with all of these, so it ended up being like a 10-minute game. So maybe it's a good thing we lost that. But you could have very passionate debates about all these guys. Okay, maybe that wasn't as dumb as I thought, but it was a game. So hope you guys enjoyed playing. So, okay, we have some Criterion discs. So the new arrivals this past week were Deepan, Palme d'Or winner, which is probably no coincidence, came out on the 23rd. And then this upcoming week we have Ghost World and the World Cinema Project, Scorsese's project, Part 2. They're coming on Tuesday the 30th. So big week. My mailman will be a little, well, actually he won't be phased at all. He carries packages all day, but and a lot of packages to my door. So exciting week. But we try to cover one film, one recent release on the show, and one I've been kicking down the curb for a while is 45 Years. I actually was going to watch this with my wife as date night, and I had just seen it less than a year ago. So, and she's a big Tom Courtney fan, of course, younger Tom Courtney. He hasn't done a whole lot besides this in his later years. He's done a few things, but we just kept on procrastinating. And then I thought about it. I was like, I don't know if I want to watch a movie with my wife that's about no pun intended, but an icy marriage after a number of years. And so anyway, she went out of town for Memorial Day real quick. So I went ahead and just went solo on this one. Maybe one day but not 45 years from now. So, guys, have you both had a chance to see this? Well, Kyle, did you have a chance to watch 45 Years?
Yeah, I rewatched it a little bit a couple days ago. I saw it when it first came out in the theater, and I really, really think the film's powerful, and I really think the filmmaker... Who's the filmmaker? What's his name?
Andrew Haig. I think that's how you... Is it Haig or a Hay? Do you know, Jason?
I don't.
Or a... Haig. probably Haig. I believe that's how it is.
He, but he made a film called Weekend, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. I worked on a film out in Los Angeles called Breaking Fast, and like the template of the film, like, hey, this is what we're kind of going for, was Weekend, and it was such a beautifully crafted film. And it's very in the vein of 45 Years mm-hmm. of just like kind of viewing a relationship from the outside and just seeing how, you know, things formulate and things are, you know, coming together, and you see how things break down all just from like an outside view. It's like, you know, you're an outsider watching them, and it's just kind of put there for you to interpret it and put there for you to just view it and see what you see from it. And I really think that's kind of powerful from a filmmaker, like, 'cause his style is like almost no style in a way. It's just kind of like, you leave it there and you let the actors, you know, do a lot of the work. And like, not saying he's not placing the camera in important places. Like, there's beautiful mm-hmm. shots and and like, definitely there's important cuts, and he really is specific with the way he shoots the film, but it's just very minimalistic when he goes into it, at least with these two films for sure. Mm-hmm. These are only two films of his I've seen, but they're definitely powerful films.
I haven't seen Weekend, actually. I own it. It's upstairs. I could watch it any time, but I just haven't gotten around to it. So, yeah, but that's basically what I've heard. It's very much 45 years-ish. So, Jason, did you get a chance to watch it or rewatch it?
Yeah, I watched it with my wife yesterday, and you made a good decision. I don't know how your wife feels about, like, vague cinema. Like, by the end of it, we didn't know what happened. We understood it. And after doing a little bit of research, I got it, but mm-hmm. it left a lot of questions. But I would say that they have the documentary on the Criterion release. I watched about half of it before we came on here this afternoon.
Oh, cool.
And it answered a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. And we try to avoid spoilers, but I have a feeling I know which questions you were asking or being asked. But was this your first time seeing it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I saw it when it came out, or maybe when it came out on video, because it came out on the studio DVD or Blu-ray, which actually I was kind of surprised that the Criterion was released so soon after the studio Blu-ray. So I think really less than a year. So this is actually, I think vague cinema is a great term for it, but slow cinema is probably fair.
Absolutely.
I don't see slow cinema as a negative term. I think I can get into some slow cinema, especially this. I think that sometimes less is more. But if you have the attention span of I can't think of an analogy. But if you don't have much of an attention span, or if you like a lot of action, actually even a lot of dialogue, then this is probably not for you. And in fact, I pulled a quote. This is actually, I found it from IMDb, but I just thought it was perfect. It was from some jury, and I didn't write down the festival, but it was from Ian Hart, and he said, "There's an old actor's joke when someone's rehearsing a scene, and they come across a certain piece of text, and they say, 'I don't need that line, I can do that with a look.' But most people can't, so the line goes back in. But certain people can. They can do more with a gesture, they can do more with a look than most people can do with 10 words, and this is why the award goes to Charlotte Rampling." And I probably should have written down which festival that was, because she obviously won Best Actress. But I think both performances, I think it's a showcase for the performances, and I think they're both fantastic. But I think Rampling, and when I watched it again, and I'll be honest, I didn't actively watch it as much. If you know the twists and turns, you kind of, you can, it's more just picking up on the atmosphere and the emotions. But just seeing the looks she gave and how she emoted with that. Like, there's the scene where she's on the boat, or the scene where she's walking through the shops. That woman is just fantastic actress. And actually, and I won't go into the final scene, but she says a lot with her face without dialogue. Actually, just her reactions to really her husband kind of speaks volumes. So, are you guys with me? Is she just an amazing performer, Kyle?
Yeah, she's unbelievable. And going back to that final scene without spoiling anything, and it's not like they even cut to close-ups like that much. Like, they just keep it in a wide, and you're just like seeing, you know, the husband speak, and then you just see her, and she just, everything on her face just says it all. And like, people don't understand sometimes how hard that can be just to emote, you know, with facial expressions. Like, there's very few actors and actresses out there that can, like, convey a performance just through emoting through, you know, facial expressions or body language. Like, even the body language throughout the film with her. Like, the beginning of the film, you know, the opening shot, you know, she's with her dog and they're walking, and, like, she is kind of more in a spry mood, like, and everything. And then there's, like, a shot in the middle of the film, and the dog's running away from her, and, like, she's just down, and it's a little more grim. And, like, just, like, subtleties like that are, you know, just great in a performance. And that, you know, and you can't really teach that.
No.
Like, that just comes from the heart, you know? Like, that's just from someone that's done this for so long, and it's, like, you just appreciate seeing a performance like that.
Yeah, she's been around the block a few times, and she's been great in a number of things. Actually, it's been a little while, but I really like her in Swimming Pool, which is kind of is the alternate to this young sexual fiend, basically. But one thing about Haig's filmmaking is he gives them the space, and he lets the camera linger on those expressions, because a lot of directors would do shot reverse shot, and they wouldn't be one take. They wouldn't see the reactions, but I think the reactions actually spoke a lot more than the dialogue. And just by letting her stay in close up, I think she really is the heart or the core of the movie. So I like it. I liked it a lot more. And also just the landscapes. I like filmmakers that aren't in a hurry, but can still tell a riveting story. And this one does have, you know, it's slow cinema, but it does have its plot twists, and it's part of her research and discovery. So Jason, overall, did you and your wife like the film?
After we had a chance to discuss it, yes.
Okay.
Because we had to really break it down. I want to, going back to her performance real quick, it felt like about 5 minute long scene when she was watching the slides,
about
halfway through the film.
Yeah.
you know, not a stitch of dialogue. An entire story is told.
Mm-hmm.
And it's remarkable, that kind of performance.
And there's a really big reveal that they don't really acknowledge in that scene. And that really gives the entire story depth. And I'm going to dance around it here, too. But and then, in fact, I kind of had the commentary on it while I was doing chores in the background, but cleaning house. But they kind of pointed that out, that some people miss that. And I guess if you turn away and look at your phone, you might miss that. So, yeah, pay attention. And it just... You miss a lot if you miss that little detail that speaks volumes as to, and also, you know, you're married. I doubt if you're married, Kyle, but if you are, that's cool.
I'm not. I'm single right now.
All right. But when you are, you know, that's you do think about prior experiences. You know, I've had other women before my wife. I'm not going to tell you how many. I'm not going to tell her how many. She has an idea. And some were, you know,
were any of them engaged to you? Did you give any of them wooden rings?
I did not, but, you know, I did have some close calls, and my wife's aware of that. I did have some serious relationships. We don't dwell on them. I'm not going to compare mine with the 45 years there. I don't pine for any of them anymore, or really even think about them that much. But she has as well. She's had relationships, but we love each other. So yay, hooray marriage, or at least hooray our marriage. And she's out of town, and I'm a bachelor right now. So. That's right. I didn't say what I've been doing. I've been sitting on my ass. So, okay, well, 45 years. Yeah, so I liked it a lot more the second time. I like you, Jason, my first time through, I had a little trouble getting on its level. And I hate to be the guy saying, oh, watch something again, you know, especially something that's slow. Because I did like it the first time, but it really resonated a lot more the second. So, and I would probably revisit it many more times, but probably not within the next year. Are you with me, Kyle?
Yes, I am.
Cool. All right. Well, that was 45 years.
I mean, honestly, 5 minutes reading the Wikipedia page kind of answered many of my questions.
Yeah. So. Isn't Wikipedia awesome?
Yeah. Great. It's probably all lies, but that's okay.
Well, yeah, that's right. There could have been an elephant in the movie that we wouldn't know. All right. So we'll move on to some other stuff. Wow, the show's not as packed as usual, but there is some stuff to get to. When we get to Filmstruck, we have plenty to talk about. So there was a gentleman at the Criterion Closet, and his name was Matias Pinheiro. I don't know him. I didn't even know his name, or I was aware of him before a couple days ago when I saw this video. I always love these videos. I think they're a blast, just seeing what people indulge in. And so I think you might have seen in the Facebook group, I posted it, and I joked that my wife saw it with me, and she said, this is the Argentinian version of my husband, because he picked pretty much everything I love, my favorite directors, and also, of course, since he's Argentinian, he picked the only Argentinian film in the collection, which is La Cienega. Did you guys get a chance to watch the video, either of you, or do you know him?
I don't know him. I looked up his work, and he's only made a few films up to this point, and none of them are really available, but... I saw the video, and I thought his choices were interesting, especially when he picked the Rossellini Bergman film.
Yeah,
I really thought that was cool. That's something I would have chose, but I don't know. I thought it was interesting. What is their criteria though on picking the filmmakers? Because like before I was getting on this week, I was watching like all those videos from their YouTube channel. Yeah, so. I was just curious, like, what do they just choose filmmakers they appreciate to go in there and just go make choices, or?
Yeah, you know, they have a veil of mystery, so they'll never tell us. But I think it is just working filmmakers that have taste. Obviously, they have to be in town. A lot of times, you'll have somebody that's there promoting something at a festival. They'll just pop in, and a couple times there have been people that have been in the closet and have showed up on discs with interviews, so I think sometimes they're working together in other capacities. I could be wrong about that. I could be wrong about a lot of things, but he picked La Chienne? He picked oh no, I'm sorry, it was the Stage and Spectacle genre noir set, and he also and he finished with Jean Vigo, which and actually he had Romare, Six Moral Tales, so those are right up my alley. Jason, did you get to see it?
I did. And if you didn't watch it with the YouTube's auto subtitle, you really should. Because really? He says Buenos Aires a lot, and YouTube cannot understand what he's saying. So it says like bonus episodes, bona fide. It's everything. It starts with a B. I like to watch those and pretend like it's me. But I wouldn't be able to say anything good about the movies because I would only get the ones that I don't have.
Yeah, that's the thing. If I were there and I buy them as they come out, it would be like, all right, well, I would just be picking my favorites, and I would be nice and leave the bag relatively empty and save some for the next guy. And Kyle, maybe one day you'll be in that closet video picking your favorites. And by the way,
I would love that.
And I hope you don't mind me pointing this out, Kyle, but you're probably the youngest person we've had on the show. Am I right?
Yeah.
You're pretty
young. I get that a lot when I do these. I'm only 20. And when I did Wrong Reel, I was 17. My first Wrong Reel, I was 17. So
that is the coolest thing ever. So, and in fact, I'm in a lot of social media communities and Facebook. I think you're on more Twitter than Facebook, and I kind of minimize that a little bit. I got a little tired of Twitter. But I do see, nowadays there's so much access to so many amazing movies. And so I'm a little older than you, but if I were 20 or 17 right now and had these tastes, I mean, it would be like a golden age. So I envy you your eyes. It seems like you've seen your share of great movies.
Yeah, it's tough for me too because like there's just such a plethora of things I can go watch, mm-hmm. and like you know, yeah, we have Criterions and like there's new ones coming out like every couple weeks, and then you know, Netflix has great movies, then Hulu has pretty much giant collection of Criterion, and then you have all these new movies coming out, and it's like I don't know sometimes where to like go and watch things, so I have to like kind of control myself and like actually plan out like, all right, what am I going to watch this week, what am I going to watch, because like my goal is like every day at least watch something new, even if it's just like an episode of a television show, or if it's a short film, or it's a feature length film. I just try to watch something new every day, and you know, it works out for the most part. But you know, it's just kind of tough sometimes controlling and containing where I should keep my efforts going. So when someone goes like, "Oh, you haven't seen that," like,
dude,
someone,
give me a few.
Someone was like, what was I talking to? You haven't seen, like, all right, just a random example, like Gladiator by Ridley Scott. And I was like, yeah, I haven't, but have you seen Park Chan-wook's Old Boy? And they're like, no. And I'm like, all right, well, I've seen most of Park Chan-wook's films, and, like, mm-hmm. I just did a whole podcast on them. So, like, I've been just subjecting my time to Asian cinema, and you've been watching more, you know, the mainstream Hollywood films. It's like, I'll get around to it. It's not like I don't want to see it, but it's just like, you gotta figure out where your efforts go to when you're viewing films and where you're trying to, you know, learn from the oldies and all those things.
Well,
I wish I had, it's
okay.
Yeah.
I wish, Kyle, I had your passion at that point in my life. Cause I think at that point I was watching Evil Dead 2 every day, at least once a day.
That's fine too.
But you're not really seeing everything if you're only watching Evil Dead 2 and maybe Star Wars and being perfectly happy with it.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people's taste matures with age, so I think Kyle just has a jump start. 20, I was probably, you know, of course it was a different generation, so I was watching a lot of the horror as it came out that a lot of people celebrate today. But that's awesome. So, and well, I guess let's just dig in. We have Cannes going on, and in fact, we are recording this right about the time when they're probably going to start announcing the winners of the Cannes Festival. They had yesterday they announced the, and we're recording on a Sunday, Memorial Day weekend, so this episode probably will go up on, say, Tuesday after everybody's already knows all the winners and celebrating them and they're getting deals made and all that. But so anyway, if we seem naive, that's why. There was the Fire, I never know how to pronounce it, Fire Pressy or whatever, the International Critics Award was given yesterday. I think that was to, BPM? Have you guys been following Cannes this year?
Just pictures.
Just pictures. Kyle?
Yeah.
Not me. Last year I followed it like immensely because I actually was working on a short film that made it into the Cannes Film Festival short circuit, so I was like,
oh, very cool, all
into Cannes. But this year I haven't because I've just been so engrossed in trying to make a movie on my own. So
yeah, you've been busy.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Well, yes, and also the jury prize, but the Uncertain Regard prizes. I probably butchered that. So the critics did award BPM, which I've seen called 24 BPM, and so last year the critics awarded Tony Erdmann, so that's that one became a big international film. And usually that doesn't correlate with the Palme d'Or, but you never know. I guess that's the Ecumenical Jury Prize. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Radiance won the Ecumenical. And I follow them a little bit. There's so many, and there's so many different reviews and so much buzz that it's really difficult to get a feel on every single one. So I tend to follow the big ones. And then the Uncertain Regard was Rasulov's A Man of Integrity. So yeah, that one's not on my radar at all. Although when I look at the lists years later, or you know, years past of Cannes, usually in these categories there's some films I end up loving. So there's Amalric. He got an award. Matteo Amalric, if you guys know him, he's worked with Desplechin quite a bit. His film is called Barbara, so that won something. And then I think my prediction for the Palme d'Or, which may or may not come true, is a movie called Loveless by, I don't have it in front of me, but I would butcher it anyway, but it's the Russian director that did Leviathan. Have you guys seen Leviathan?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw Leviathan, yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. That was a couple of years ago, and that was one of the first foreign films I actually got to see in a real theater, so that was really cool to see that.
Very cool. Well, that one's pretty scathing, and apparently this new one is very political too, and Cannes tends to award, you know, of course, you know, there's it's an arts festival, so there's going to be a liberal slant, and you know, of course, that's fine. I remember they gave Fahrenheit 9/11 an award. The Michael Moore documentary won the Palme d'Or one year, so that says anything.
Yeah, went well.
There are others, and there, of course, the big ones are the Todd Haynes, is it Wanderstruck or Wanderlust? No, not Wanderlust, that was Paul Rudd.
Wanderstruck,
thank you. Yeah, that one, it seems mixed, but, you know, it's Todd Haynes, so there could be some love there. And there's, of course, Haneke. We've talked about Happy End. There's also the Lanthimos, which is apparently pretty rough. There was a really funny tweet this week after people watched the Haneke. They said, oh, boy, that's the most horrifying film I've ever seen. And then Lanthimos said, hold my deer. So hold my beer. Yeah, apparently it's pretty rough. So, Jason, any of these films or filmmakers on your radar?
I like to let festival season wrap up first before I really get too invested in anything. So I will probably see several of them in due time. Okay. But in Akron, Ohio, we have one art house theater that has one screen, so very few and far between actually get anywhere near me until they're out on physical media. So
yeah, me too. In fact, a lot of them I'll end up. I have an indie theater too, and I we're members and we can watch everything for free. I mean, quotes free because we pay for the tickets in the long run, but. But we still, and a lot of those films play, but they'll be so long after. In fact, sometimes I'll break down and buy Region B films. I think I did that with I, Daniel Blake, which will be here in a couple weeks, just because I don't want to wait the 6 months for the U.S. release. So, all right, well, let's move away from Cannes. So congratulations to whoever won. Maybe I'll just edit something in after the fact. Congratulations to The Square, Sofia Coppola, Loveless, Lanthimos, Joaquin Phoenix. So, well, let's get to some Abbas Kiarostami. So I'll just, either of you guys fans of Mr. Kiarostami? Or actually, I'll start with you, Kyle. Have you seen many? Because you're the youngest.
Yes, Close Up. Actually, that was going to be the criterion I was going to bring up when we talk about it later.
Cool. Well, actually, I've purposely not seen Close Up because we have a podcast named after it. So we decided that if we ever end that podcast, that'll be our last episode. So,
fantastic.
Yeah. So anyway, don't spoil that for me, but,
I won't.
Well, you're in for a treat. Cause, did you like Close Up?
I loved it. Okay. I loved it.
And you know, I'm spoiling your time. That's your short take. So we'll shelve that. But yeah, there's plenty of other great films from Kiarostami. He has, you know, probably 30 years, and we just lost him earlier this year. But so a label, MK2 Films, acquired 20 films by him, and they already had a number of films. They had Taste of Cherry. I don't know what's up with that. That needs to get at a Blu-ray of some sort. Probably Criterion, but I'd be fine with anything, any country. Great film. But I think the most interesting thing for Criterion lovers is they acquired, The Traveler. Oh, I'm sorry, and Life Goes On. And so that completes the trilogy of the what they call the Coker Trilogy, which also has Where's My Friend's House, which I've seen and love, and then Through the Olive Trees, which I haven't seen yet, but I want to. And this is has been rumored to be coming out on Criterion for a while, actually for years. They even teased it at a Wexner conference. And we've just been waiting, and so this might be the final deal to make this happen. So hopefully it will. Jason, have you seen any of the Coker trilogy or any other Kiarostami? Or are you a fan?
I have not. I've seen a certified copy and Close Up, and Close Up, it had a visceral effect on me when I watched it at the time. It was just on a whole other level of film, and Aaron, you're in for it, man, when you get there.
Yeah,
and you know, that really hurts because I hope it's 5, 10, 20 years because we love doing this podcast, but I gotta wait. Sure. A deal's a deal. Mark has seen it, so I'm a huge Kiarostami fan. Have you seen any of the I guess you haven't seen the Coker trilogy, right?
No, I'm excited to.
I think Where's My Friend's House? It was on Hulu. That's how I saw it. And it might be on Filmstruck. I'll have to check that. But if it's going to maybe come out and be restored, I'd wait. So,
I was about to order Taste of Cherry until everybody said just hold off for now because it was the non-anamorphic and it didn't really look great.
It doesn't look great. And it actually doesn't look great on Filmstruck either, but it's still worth watching. It's because it's such a good movie. I'd actually recommend you see it because I don't know what's happened with the Blu-ray, and it's fine. It's not HD, but if you can get around that, film is. I don't think it's pretty hypnotizing, and you kind of forget the camera the production aspect pretty quickly. At least to me,
that's the same with Close Up too. At least I feel like. It just creates such a real world within its film. It's like you forget you're watching a movie. You think you're watching real people, which kind of plays into the plot too. But yeah. and the way they actually casted the actors because they are playing themselves. But regardless,
and Close Up is an early film of his too. So
yeah.
Did you notice a big difference with HD? I mean, do you think it really enhanced it much, or do you think it would have been watchable without?
I loved the way they restored it, and it looked beautiful. To be honest, like, for this one, though, like, for Close-Up, I don't think it matters, because it's playing off like it's a documentary, so you could find it, and even if it was, like, an old VHS tape, you could appreciate it the same way as, you know, you're watching it, you know, 4K, restoration, but I can't speak for the other film, but if the other film's more trying to be more of an actual film, then I would probably want it restored the way that Criterion restored Close Up.
Okay, well, in that case, then yeah, it is an actual film, so I guess we'll hope for that restoration to come. Since I haven't seen it in a nice print, I don't know what I'm missing, but I love that movie. It's very it has a very good sense of place too in the wilderness out there in Iran. Some people say it's just a guy driving around in circles all for a movie, but there, stuff happens. In fact, if you like 45 Years, you'll probably like this. Did I hear you wanting to say something, Jason?
Well, I was just going to say, I was hoping that when MK2 does all their other restorations, they might hit that one too.
Yeah, I hope they prioritize that one.
And my two watch stack, I'm not going to run out of things to watch
right
before they do.
Yeah, me neither. And Kyle's talking about the number of choices, you know, even at my age, and I rank as much as I can remember on Letterboxd, and I think I'm up to like 5,000 now, but there's probably easily 5,000 more I want to see. So, mm-hmm. All right, well, shall we? We've already touched on David Lynch, so it's kind of we're in David Lynch's. If we're talking about now stuff, David Lynch is very now. So, yeah. Well, Fire Walk With Me it's coming out on Criterion. It's going to happen.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's weird. It's still tough getting my head around it, but. So it's now on iTunes, and it has the Criterion branding. It has that C. Of course, Twin Peaks started this week, this past weekend, or last week, I guess. Fire Walk With Me also showed up on the Janus Films page, and it had, I forget the number, 134-minute cut or something, which I guess is the same cut that's on the disc. I'm not positive on that. But so that means maybe it's not the director's cut or, you know, David Lynch.
He's busy right now. He might not have put the cut together yet,
or maybe not. Maybe he's done making all those. And I actually watched. I'm behind the eight ball on Twin Peaks, so I finally finished the first season last week. And I've heard that Twin Peaks season two is not that good. I noticed it's 22 episodes, so I was like, man. I got to get through that 22 hours basically to start the new thing, which everybody's raving about. So, Jason, are you a Twin Peaks fan?
I am a Twin Peaks fan. I will say if you definitely watch the first 7 episodes of the second season,
okay,
to tie up the original story, the other half, it's good. I enjoy it, but it didn't have that fervor that you got in the Laura Palmer story. But I certainly enjoyed it. And the 2 episodes I watched of the new series was a lot more similar. It felt a lot more like Fire Walk With Me than it did the show.
Okay. And I guess there's a digression with I think they said it's somebody named Jason or something, a subplot. I could have that wrong. But so do you think it's safe? Could I watch the first 7 episodes and then skip the rest and start the new season? Or do you think I have to, or do you think I'm better off watching the entire second season and then starting the third?
Maybe watch the first 7. And obviously the answer is watch the whole thing.
Okay.
But if you watch the first 7 and then like the last 2 to tie it up, because there's a whole Civil War subplot that you could do without.
Okay.
In the back half.
Captain America show up or no?
No.
Okay. Well, yeah.
There's a lot of rebel flags.
A lot of rebel flags. So Kyle, are you a fan of the series or the old or the new?
I have held off watching the new series because I'm going to rewatch, because I haven't watched Twin Peaks in probably 4 years. That was the first time I watched it all the way through. I love the first season. And knowing the kind of history with Lynch with the second season, how he was just not happy with it at all.
Right.
I can see why, especially with the way they approached the whole ending of Laura Palmer's story.
Mm-hmm. That's probably the episode 7. So yeah.
But I still enjoy it regardless, and I'm excited for the new season. And I'm just a huge David Lynch fan too. So, you know, anything new David Lynch, especially after him saying he's not going to make any more movies, which I don't know if that's true, but you know, like
he backtracked on that a little bit. He kind of said, maybe. I think
right,
he will.
Good. Yeah, he has to. He's too good not to.
He's still real. I mean, I don't know his age, but he still has some career left in him.
Exactly, for sure. So, you know, I just, to see anything new from David Lynch, I'm in no matter what.
Well, one thing I
noticed, even if it's more Dumb Land.
So what
was that? Even if it's more episodes of Dumb Land.
All right.
I have seen Dumb Land. Yeah. Actually, he's 71, so okay, he's no spring chicken, but he's definitely has creativity left in him. Well, one thing I noticed about the first season is I really got into episode 3, which is apparently the one that turned a lot of people off. In fact, my wife, her family checked out after season 3. They're like, what is this shit, basically? That was with the short guy, and the I think there was reverse. Yeah, I loved that. But then I thought, okay, great, we're getting into warped territory. It's going to be kind of very surreal. You know, the David Lynch I know going forward. And it, there were elements, but it really didn't. You know, Log Lady was one element of some weirdness, but it didn't go too far off the deep end. And that's probably something working with a network. He probably couldn't. And maybe that's his frustration with the second season, is that the network probably dictated where he went. I'm just speculating. So, is that fair?
Oh yeah, for sure. And I've heard him say that, you know, they wanted Lynch, the network told him they wanted you to want him to end the story of Laura Palmer and like give it an ending, which he didn't really want to do. He wanted to just kind of be left out there and like just in the world of Twin Peaks, and you know, they could just make new stories from around that and not have really it be finalized on what actually happened, which, you know, that could have been cool, and maybe, you know, that could have made something a little more interesting, but I don't know. That could be the downfall, but who knows? Okay.
Well, I don't know if you heard the episode, but we had two artists. One was a Criterion artist, one was a Criterion fan artist, but they both were saying that Firewalk with Me was okay, and so they weren't too excited, but they loved Twin Peaks. But there were some comments saying, "Wait a minute, Firewalk with Me is amazing. Watch it." So, which camp are you guys in? Do you think Firewalk with Me is great or okay? Or Jason, what do you think?
Great.
I
really enjoyed it.
Okay,
and I hope they do a longer cut, but. Even the one that's out on the Complete Mystery set was really, really good. And it looked great, too.
Kyle?
So. I'm on the same camp. I go to a theater in Boston, or, well, technically Brookline, called the Coolidge Corner Theater, and they always have midnight screenings every weekend of 35mm films, and that was one of them they did last month. And I got to see it for the first time in, like, years, and it was fantastic. Awesome. I was like, this is so cool. So, for me, I love it, so...
Yeah, Boston is very well represented on this show. So, in fact, they're going to have another guest, I think, in a few weeks who's also Boston proud. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. It seems like you guys have a great film scene there. I don't know. Are you a little ways from Boston, or are you?
So, I'm from a town called Nashua, New Hampshire. It's like 45 minutes away, so it's a quick drive. And I'm always in the city. I run my own production company too, so I shoot music videos, commercials, and things like that. So I'm always down there working too.
My God, so, you're 20.
Yeah,
you've accomplished more than I've accomplished today. So, well, and also on the subject of Lynch, there's Angelo Badalamenti. That's probably terrible. He showed up on Instagram. He's the gentleman that does the scores, tremendous scores for all his works. Actually, Twin Peaks, it's a good score, but it, you know, I've noticed, and I don't know if it changes as the series progresses, but it's basically the same thing over and over again. But the other movies are fantastic, so he probably is contributing to this Firewalk with Me, hopefully. But there's also another project in the works, which is David Lynch, The Art of Life, which is also on iTunes. And I saw it's actually coming on Amazon Prime on June 29th, so that seems weird. That'll be Prime streaming, so we'll be able to see it for free on iTunes. I kind of doubt if that has a tie with Janus or Criterion, but you never know. I mean, usually if they put films on Amazon, but usually it's with their branding, and you have to rent them. So maybe there'll be a double disc. I don't know. Are you, if it's a double disc, Kyle, are you going to buy it first day?
Yeah, I will. Is this this new flick, is it a documentary on him, or is it?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's kind of documentary, but it's not like one of those. All right, David was born. He grew up and did this and did this. Apparently, it's more a documentary that's more fitting for David Lynch's aesthetic, I think. So not your traditional one.
Yeah, I'd definitely watch it though.
So okay, well, we probably have two David Lynch films. Coming, hopefully. So I'll buy them too, but I buy everything. Jason, you excited about these?
Yes, I'm very excited. They will probably be first sale purchases.
Okay.
Or next sale. Probably not day ones.
Okay, but, cool.
I'm excited.
All right, well, let's move on to our short takes. And, well, Kyle, I know what yours is, but we'll start with Jason. So, Jason, did you watch a Criterion movie?
The last two, I've been watching a lot of Arrow lately. Cool. But the last two that I watched were Tampopo and Woman in the Dunes. I had first seen Tampopo a couple weeks before that at the Wexner Center. And I saw up on the big screen, and it looked amazing. And I, my wife is probably sick of me mentioning Tampopo. It's just so lovely. And then Woman in the Dunes, it's so beautiful, mm-hmm. and such a wonderful time to spend.
Yeah, Woman in the Dunes has been on my stack of last year's to watch. I think there's only about four discs I haven't watched from last year, but I've seen it before, and I love it. And I'm just waiting for that moment where I know I'm going to be blown away by it again, but I just haven't gotten to it. And probably that time slot's now reserved for Gene Dillman, which is something I'll need a longer time slot for that. So
I just picked that up, too.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm going to be curious your thoughts. Anything else to say about those films, Jason, or...?
Not really. I mean, I wrote about them on the website, so.
Okay. Well, I'll find those links and then people can go read if they want to hear what Jason says. So Kyle, what do you think about Close Up that you haven't said already?
Well, I've watched a couple in the past week getting ready for this. I'll change it so we don't kind of delve into that territory too much. Another one I watched that I just adored was Francois Truffaut's Day for Night.
Great.
I bought it a while ago. I just hadn't had the chance to watch it, though. And just the restoration of the film and just the film in general is just beautiful. And I fell in love with it. And I haven't laughed at a movie the way I laughed at Day for Night in so long. It was just cracking me up all the way through.
It is. I love that movie. In fact, I was just talking with somebody about The Player yesterday and meta movies about movies. And I brought up and I said, oh, that's just my wheelhouse. That's the type of film I love. And I brought up this. And what's that great Natalie Bay line? I think it's become a meme in certain art film circles. I would leave a guy for a film, but I would never leave a film for a guy. Isn't that awesome?
It's just brilliant.
Just speaks to their passion. Yeah. And I love the score too. De La Rue.
It's fantastic. Good. And the fact his performance in it, Francois's performance in it, I didn't expect him to be in it because I didn't know anything going into it and I hadn't seen it before. Mm-hmm. And I was just surprised. Like, it was just so natural. And I know he's pretty much just playing himself, but it was just so natural and just so like charming in the role. And I loved him every moment he was on screen.
Yeah, probably a version of himself. He's probably not that. Yeah. I'm sure he's a charming fellow, but I'm sure he had an edge.
They all do. Sure.
Not as much as Godard, but something. All right. Well, I went into out of print territory. I watched Le Cercle Rouge by Jean-Pierre Melville, I've seen a lot of his works. I think probably the only major one I haven't seen is Le Duluth, and I think that's also out of print. Can't remember if I own that or not. I think I do, but this was a big sacred cow for me. And the out of print disc was in the shrink wrap. I think I bought it maybe a year or two ago. I think I got a pretty good deal. But I really like Melville, and Army of Shadows is probably one of my favorite films of all time. And I do like, you know, we talked about the art house or fun house. You know, we mentioned Hitchcock. You know, he's kind of fun house, but also art house in a way. You could actually have a whole episode debating that. Many people have. Oh, yeah. You could say the same thing about Melville. You know, he's definitely a slow burn filmmaker, but he does have action sequences, but he takes his time getting there. And there's a lot of character moments. I did like Le Cercle Rouge. It was not my favorite of his. I think it's hard, but of course this was my first time, and like I said, with 45 years, sometimes you have to watch things twice. It was good, kind of a good crime saga, and I like the slow burn. I think I prefer his movies with Lionel Ventura than, I think there are more movies with Delon, but Delon was not as impressive in this one. This was a little later in his career. He had that little porn mustache, so... He was all right, but I think the first half was a lot stronger than the second half. I think, and it was a long movie. It was about 2.5 hours, so I think it could have been condensed a little bit. But still, have you guys seen it?
I have not, and I haven't seen anything of Mel Brooks yet. I don't even know where to start with him, to be honest. If anyone wants to point me in a direction,
Army of Shadows.
Army of Shadows.
It's out of print and it's expensive, but it's about he was in the French Resistance. And it kind of combines, he did like gangster films in his late career.
Oh, cool.
But Slow Burn, this is a Slow Burn kind of gangster film. But this kind of takes those elements and applies it to the French Resistance, which he actually was a member of in the war. So he's speaking from experience. And it's, I think it's a very amazing layered film. Very deep. It's something that it'll grab you on your first watch. But the more times you watch it, the more you'll see. Amazing film.
I'll definitely check that out for sure.
Jason, are you a Melville fan?
I am a Melville fan. I would actually suggest Le Samurai. I'm pretty sure it's on Struck.
Yeah.
And I think you'd enjoy that. Le Cercle Rouge is on my stack, inching its way to the top, so that should be very soon.
Yeah, Le Samurai is going. I feel safe saying it's going to come out on Criterion Blu at some point. It's been on the iTunes channel for ages, and I have seen that. No, that's more of a Alain Delon being a hip, slick, and cool gangster. You know, I think. But it is a good, very, very good movie. And so I think either. In fact, yeah, I think you're right. I'd start with Le Samurai and then go to Army of Shadows. Are you with me on Army of Shadows, Jason? Are you a fan?
Yes, I am.
All right, well, we'll talk about some Filmstruck, and then we're kind of gonna slam dunk and finish this thing. So, first off, I'll just ask Kyle in order. Well, Kyle, do you have Filmstruck?
I do not, and I actually don't know what it is. If you guys could tell me, to be honest.
Well, all right, there you go. It's a stream. It's Criterion's streaming service. It's partnered with TCM, and you don't have to have it for what we do. But it's basically we just use it as. Stuff to come out with new material every week, and so you'll as we get into it you'll see. So Jason,
I found the clips online, like some clips online, but I wasn't sure if it was an actual streaming service or a website or what exactly it was.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, once they go ahead.
Oh well, I was going to say you can when you have a couple weeks to spare, you can get the trial. Get the trial, Doug. That's an in joke. You can get the trial and just kind of binge. I think it's a 2-week trial or a month trial. So, what was that, Jason?
I was just going to say that once Criterion's contract with Hulu expired, they launched this new service. So if you go on Hulu now, you'll see that they might. I don't. There's nothing left there now, Aaron. Is there?
Not Criterion. No.
So they moved everything over there.
So yeah, Kyle.
Plus they also get stuff. From like Flickr Alley is a partner in it too, so they have a bunch of stuff.
A whole bunch, and there's so basically like maybe 1,000 or 2 of the greatest films of all time. So that's what's there. I think
you're gonna have to invest.
It'll be up your alley, and you'll see as we talk about some of these. So all right, well they have a main channel and a Criterion channel, and actually Kyle, they're different tiers. So you can pay like $6 a month I think for the main channel, or $10 a month for the Criterion channel. And even though the main channel is okay, it's really not. You need to do the Criterion channel. That's where the riches are. So, sure. But they have little curated groupings of films each week, and they add them to the service. So the first one was directed by Nicholas Ray, and I'm a huge Ray fan, but I've pretty much only seen the movies that are on Filmstruck, I think, except for Rebel Without a Cause. So Kyle, have you seen any Ray films yet?
Yeah, Rebel Without a Cause is one of my favorite films ever made. So.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Seen any others?
Johnny Guitar.
Okay.
I've seen.
That's a good one.
Yes.
I'm trying to think what else he's made. I've seen, like those two alone.
Mm-hmm.
Huge influence on me.
Cool.
But I still have to do the deep dive on his whole career.
Jason, are you a Ray fan?
He made In a Lonely Place, yeah, correct?
He did, yeah. And actually, I'll go ahead and just list these. So you have
I was trying to pull it up on my phone.
So in A Lonely Place, They Live by Night, which is coming out next month on Criterion. I can't wait. Bigger Than Life, which is amazing. Kind of a melodrama with an edge. On Dangerous Ground, which I haven't seen. Party Girl. And then there's a film by his wife called Don't Expect Too Much. And then We Can't Go Home Again from 2011, which I believe that was outtakes from a project he did while he was teaching. So his career ended prematurely. That's a story in itself. So, Jason, any of those films grab you?
Not directly, but it looks like I'm going to be watching Party Girl very soon, based on the picture I see.
Well, I would recommend In a Lonely Place, and I did see They Live by Night long time ago. It's these are noir films. I don't know if you're a fan of noir, Kyle.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And then Bigger Than Life is a melodrama. It's kind of like a Douglas Sirkian melodrama, but it's about in the 50s and how things aren't as nice as they should be. The other main channel curation was Going South, which was, I don't think we're going to have a lot to say about this. It's films about going to Antarctica. So there's Ernest Shackleton's Expedition, The Silent, and there's Scott of the Antarctic. There's Dirigible by Frank Capra, which I'm guessing is a dirigible that goes south. And there's With Bird at the South Pole by Julian Johnson. So I'm 0 for 4 on this list. Anybody? Bueller? No? So, sorry. There's a little... They also have little videos they make that summarize the films. I didn't get to watch it for this, so... Anyway, the fun stuff is in the Criterion Channel, and this week we had quite a treat with, I won't say his first name again, Guillermo del Toro. They have a series that they do, Adventures in Movie Going, and that's once a month they'll get a figure from film. They've had Bill Hader, they've had Michael Cera, and they've also had writers, and they had a poet once. So this time they have big-time director, Del Toro. And so it was about a 25, 30-minute interview, and he talked about a number of his influences. So I guess, Jason, did you get to see it?
I watched a couple of them. I didn't watch the 25-minute one, but I watched the La Chienne and Beauty and the Beast, just the short ones.
Okay, right.
So I wanted to watch the rest, but no time.
Okay. Do you like Del Toro or?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I would say that this might be an unpopular opinion, but Crimson Peak is one of the best films that's been made recently.
All right.
It was perfect.
That is unpopular. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm in the opposite camp of that one.
I am too. No, agree to disagree, Jason. But
absolutely.
It could have been a lot better. I think.
Exactly.
It was well produced, that for sure. But
for sure.
Yeah.
For what it was as a gothic horror, if you can watch it as that and not as a horror, you get something out of it completely different.
Yeah,
I'm thinking about Innocence and stuff like that.
Actually, the Innocence is that hits me where I live. That's where I go for gothic horror. But I could see it going. I had some problems with the ending too. I won't go into, but and the story. So, but in general, I think Del Toro is a fun film. He's Funhouse. He's a fun filmmaker.
Yeah, for sure.
Kyle, are you a fan of his?
Yeah, I'm a fan of his. And with Crimson Peak, what you just said there, Jason, it reminded me of like an old 30s, 40s.
Yeah,
monster movie, like horror, like Universal monster movie. So if you put it in that context and you kind of view it like as a love letter to that, almost, you know, not with like a Frankenstein monster or anything, but like, what was the movie with Boris Karloff?
There's probably about 100.
I think it was Old Dark House or something like that. I can't remember the exact name, but like kind of reminded me of that. I was like, all right, yeah, that's cool. I saw what they're doing, but the way they sold it, the way they advertised it, and the way he was even talking about it, I was expecting this like completely different movie. I guess I got to watch it, and it just took me off guard, and I was like, I don't know. But overall, I'm really a huge fan of his.
Have you seen
also Jessica Chastain can do no wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah, I hear she's been doing some wrong lately, but I haven't seen too much. Kyle, have you seen The Innocents? By Jack Clayton.
No, I have not.
put it on your list. This list is growing, but put that's one of the best Gothic horrors of all time. And I think when you watch that, you actually, like Jason said, you might appreciate Crimson Peak more. I think having that, I did, because there's definitely an homage to that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just, I think it's just so good. You can't compare it. So I don't know if you're in agreement there, Jason.
I will compare them. I think they're both good.
Okay.
But again, you not a, as somebody that's not a fan of Crimson Peak, I can completely see how you would not want to compare them.
Cool. Well, I did watch the 25-minute one, and it was okay. Usually I'm pretty enthralled by these, and Del Toro, I like him because he's one of us. He's a filmmaker, but he's also a film fan, and he likes the same stuff. And I don't know if you saw his, he had a supplement, Bleak House, I think it was called. So he basically has a house for his collectibles. He also has money. So he has a house with, like, figurines, DVD. He probably has the entire Criterion collection and then some. Books, he's a dork, like just like us, in the best way possible. So I enjoy hearing him, and he did talk about La Chienne and some other films that I love. So I like hearing about those things and hearing how he reconciles his career as basically a horror and, kind of a mainstream filmmaker in a way, but with art house sensibilities. So yeah, not my favorite of the series, but it was still interesting, and I'm happy to share, to spend 25 minutes with the guy.
Sure.
So and he also talked about Kanoa, A Shameful Memory, and he's a big fan of that. And I think that came out as a digital spine. No, that did not. I think that's just. I think that was a featured from him. So we talked about that probably about 5 or 10 episodes ago. But are you guys fans of Kanoa? You probably haven't seen it, Kyle, right?
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet, but I watched the video of him talking about it, and I put it on my list.
Cool. Well, put Innocence higher, even though Kanoa's very good. Jason, are you a fan of Kanoa?
I have not seen it.
Okay.
Well, but I was on the list.
I recommend it. We talked about it, so I won't go over it. But all right. Well, they also have a Tuesday short plus feature, and this was pretty cool because it was Denis Villeneuve's first appearance in the collection, his short called Next Floor. And I'll just ask, I guess, Kyle, you probably haven't seen it, but Jason, did you get to see it?
I did not.
Okay, well, I'll talk about it. And they pair it with Babette's Feast, and that's the big foodie feast movie. So I really enjoyed Next Floor. It was only about, I think, 10, 12 minutes, maybe longer. But it's about a group of people that are eating a meal, and it's carnivorous. It's meat. They're eating it. They don't have table manners. They're just pretty much gorging themselves in this meal. And there's a wait staff that keeps on feeding them, and they do that until they fall through the floor. And so the joke is, next floor, the crew goes downstairs, and then they set up the table again, clean up the debris, and then keep feeding them. So so that's the joke. I think it was 2008. I could have that wrong. But you definitely see where Villeneuve got his. You could tell that with this little short, he knew what he was doing. So Villeneuve, are you guys fans? Kyle, have you seen many of his works?
Yeah, I loved Arrival. I really, really loved Arrival. This is like unpopular opinion, but I hated Sicario. I couldn't stand it. Just the character development was just, for me, not there. I just didn't care at all going through it. It was shot beautifully. It was constructed beautifully as a film. But, like, the characters and the story, I just did not care from, like, the jump. And I just couldn't get on board with that. What was the other one he made? He made Prisoners, which was... I enjoyed Prisoners. Mm-hmm. But what was the other one he made? It was...
There was one before... Before that, it's actually been rumored. I forget the name. It's the one I haven't seen. Oh, wait, didn't he do Enemy?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, Enemy. Yeah. I really enjoyed Enemy.
I like Enemy, too. That's an unpopular opinion. I almost threw you off the show, Kyle, for Sicario. I'm a big fan of Sicario. Yeah. But I love the convergence of the cinematography and the score. And kind of like 45 years. Sometimes I like less development, although I like some. So, yeah, I'm not going to compare the two. They're definitely different types of films. But Villeneuve, Jason, are you a fan?
I will agree that the characters in Sicario could have used a lot of work, but they didn't have time for it, for the action that they had. And I thought it was gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, and Roger Deakins.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite movies he's ever shot. Like, so beautiful. And, like, again, on that film, on a filmmaking level, is almost as close as perfection as you can get. But, like, just so much of that story, like, just the character, at least for me, it just was so on the opposite spectrum of, like, how good the filmmaking was. So I didn't really understand it coming from that way.
That's fair. And actually, my wife was with you. She was like, all right, looked and sounded good. It's a nice test of a good new TV, but excuse me. So he also did Polytechnique. That was his first, I think, feature, or no, maybe not his first, but an early feature. And that's been rumored to come on Criterion. He did Incendies. So, and I haven't seen either of those two. And then, of course, Arrival. He's doing this movie you may have heard of, but it's called Blade Runner 2049. And I'm with you. I love Arrival. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, and Babette's Feast, it's about a feast. I prefer Next Floor to Babette's Feast, but I'm going to give it another shot, probably around Thanksgiving. And then they came out with a digital spine, and what this is if you don't want to buy every single disc in the Criterion Collection, or if you don't have $10,000 to spare, what they do is they'll put up a digital spine, so it's basically the film and all the features that are on the disc, and it'll stay up there for a couple months. So this month is the Italian, it's sort of a neorealism, I forget the name of the filmmaker, but I knew her well, and I actually liked this film quite a bit. I'm guessing you haven't seen it, Kyle, because it's, and I would put it lower on the list, but on the list all the same. Have you seen it, Jason?
Not yet.
All right. Well, I'd put it on your list too. It's good.
Yeah, the disc is here somewhere.
Okay. So it's Antonio Pietrangeli. Yeah, good stuff and a good character study. If you like Antonioni, you'll probably like this.
Okay.
And then we had a Friday double feature. And when I first saw this listing, I thought, what in the world do these films have in common? So it was Rome, Open City, and Brief Encounter. But what they have in common is they won the Palme d'Or at Cannes. So there you go. That's about the only thing they have in common.
That is all.
So have you got... Well, Kyle, have you seen Brief Encounter or Rome, Open City?
I have not.
It's okay. Put both of them very, very high on the list. We're just going to... When you listen back, just take notes, all right?
Oh, for sure.
Brief Encounter is one of the best romantic dramas of all time, and it's short, too. It's like under an hour and a half. Cool. So, great. Do you like classic film, like 40s, 50s, 30s?
Oh, yeah, I love it. Actually, James and I, Ron Riddle, we're getting ready. Not my next appearance, but the one after. We're going to do a whole thing on Billy Wilder.
Cool, yeah.
Well, yeah, so I'm a huge fan of the 40s. Really, all film, just, you know... I definitely love the golden age of Hollywood. Like, I'm in love with that. And I love, especially the early 50s, like, you know, films like Nicholas Ray's, you know, Rebel Without Cause, and, you know, the Billy Wilder films like Some Like It Hot. You know, I love all those films.
Bold prediction. You watch Brief Encounter and it might end up being one of your favorite films of all time. It's just that good. And Rome, Open City is good too. It's pretty much the height of, it's like the quintessential neorealism, and it's basically filmed in the ruins of the war. So, but yeah, anyway, Brief Encounter first, Rome, Open City second, and then The Innocents.
Cool. Jason, you're getting me excited now.
I know. Jason, any thoughts on these?
I have to watch Brief Encounter again. It didn't click with me the first time through. Actually, boo. I watched that entire set.
This is a heresy show.
Yes, I know. And like Black Spirit actually connected more for me.
Really?
Okay. And some of the other ones in the set. But Rome, Open City was the first non-English film that I remember seeing in a film class in college. It was probably like a 16mm print that they projected, and it changed what I knew of film when I saw that. It's got a very deep place in my heart because of that moment.
Yeah, so. It's an amazing movie. So that's quite a double feature to finish with. And I'll just mention that there have been a number of other Criterion films that have won the Palme d'Or. Surprisingly, not too many recently. The most recent was Blue is the Warmest Color. Well, I guess D-Pen. D-Pen, of course, just came out this week, and it won last year, so that's a big deal. So Blue is the Warmest Color, and Rosetta, and also Taste of Cherry, which we mentioned, that one. Paris, Texas, I'm not gonna read the whole list, but I'll go down a ways. The Leopard, La Dolce Vita, Cranes Are Flying, The Third Man, you might have heard of that. The Wages of Fear, and didn't La Ventura win? Oh, I'm sorry, La Ventura was booed at Cannes. There's a lot of booing at Cannes. I know, yeah. So, all right, guys, that's the episode. Thank you for joining me. So we just have one little thing left, and that's what we call the piece of flair, which is just something random. So, Jason, what's your piece of flair?
I just open up a box, and inside that box has Alf 1, and I have not experienced it yet, but I'm very excited to. And so that's what I'm going to go with. And getting into Rivette. I know it's a tall order, but I'm excited for that.
So you basically reserved 20 hours for yourself, maybe 30.
My wife is going out of town for a week next month.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, especially parts 1 and 2. Watch that when your wife is out of town, just because the performance, it's a lot of screaming, like primal scream cinema. I'm just warning you; you might not like it.
That's fine.
I like it, but I like it as an experiment. Anyway, I'm not going to say too much about that one. We actually did an episode for Criterion Cast about it. So when you're finished, listen to that. I think it was me, Scott, Martin Kessler, and I think Mark was on there. Yeah, Mark. So, all right, well, enjoy. It is a wonderful set, and I think Rivette's very important. Kyle, you have a piece of flair?
Yeah, I have like part 1A and 1B. 1A, I'm just excited. House of Cards is coming back.
Cool.
This Tuesday, love that show. I think it's fantastic. And then 1B, for any gamers out there, I just started playing the Friday the 13th video game. I'm a huge horror fan, huge slasher fan.
Cool.
And I was a backer on the Kickstarter when it started like 2 years ago, and it's finally has arrived. And pretty much the whole premise is it's 1-on-7. One person plays as Jason, 7 players play as the camp counselors, and you have one goal on each side. Either you got to kill everyone, or you have to survive and figure out how you can escape. And it's just really cool because it's, you know, you get set off alone in the middle of the woods at the beginning of the match, and then you have to find each other. And if you're playing with microphones on, you can't hear each other while you're playing unless you're, like, very close to each other. And Jason can hear you if he's near you. So, like, you have to be very strategic in how you play. And it's a terrifying game, too, because they use a lot of the locations from the films. And they bring back really good memories and nostalgic memories for myself, at least.
Yeah, probably me, too. That sounds awesome. What's amazing is that Friday the 13th, as popular a franchise as it is, had a Kickstarter. But
yeah,
I'm sure it raised a ton of money. I haven't looked it up, but cool. No, I used to be a gamer. I kind of gave it up for film. it was taking too much of my time. But
I'm the same way. I don't play anymore. But this game was, you know, is just like the exception. Like, I gotta get back in just to start playing this, and it's just a lot of fun too. Like, this game is because. They had everyone that worked on the films work on the game. So, like, Kane Hodder did all the animations for Jason. Tom Savini did all the kill effects and, like, did all the weapon design, all the character design and things like that. And Sean Cunningham, like, even though he's not the biggest part of the franchise, like, he wasn't the biggest creator component of the franchise, but he, you know, has the reins of everything, so he was a part of it too. And they had the guy that did the original score for all the films, he does the score for the game. Nice. Too, so it makes it really feel like you're in a Friday the 13th movie.
I'm tempted. I don't think I have a console that'll probably play it anymore, but I think I have a PS3, that's tempting, although I have like 5 seasons of Twin Peaks to watch.
Yeah, true.
and actually, House of Cards. I love House of Cards, but I haven't gotten through season 2, so I still have 3 and 4 to get to.
Definitely. I just watched it all the way through for the first time in the past couple of weeks, and it just held me every moment of the way. And Kevin Spacey is just unreal.
He's awesome. Show. Yeah.
He's unreal. And Robin Wright, too. She's phenomenal in it.
It's also kind of, you know, can they really write anything crazier than what's going on right now? Okay, I'm not going to get into that.
That's true. That's true. They've been making jokes about it on the press junkets, too.
Yeah, I bet they have. So mine is awesome.
I watched Robin Wright. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to get to mine, but if you have comments, please.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, Robin Wright, when she was on, I think it was Colbert. I'm more excited about Wonder Woman, too, after watching her clip from it.
Okay.
But yeah, House of Cards sucks me in every time I watch it.
Cool. Yeah, apparently there's a little angst about screenings for females, which I'm not going to get into. Of Wonder Woman. So mine is also a TV show. I got into Master of None, and I got into this because I saw that they had that there was one scene where he has a stack of Criterions. So, you know, that again, that hits me where I live. And he had like La Ventura, Bicycle Thieves, some Antonioni, some Fellini, a whole bunch of Criterions. And this is the second season. He starts in Italy, and so they have. The first episode is kind of an offshoot of Bicycle Thieves and kind of mimics some of the film, but it's still its own type of show. It doesn't really, it's not like, say, Community, where they basically redo or co-opt the style of a film for a show. It's in that direction, though. And then the second one was Lunati, and they just kind of have some scenes that happen in Lunati, and then later they get to La Ventura. So, yeah, I basically binge-watched the whole thing over the last couple weeks, season one and season two, and it's pretty good. This is Aziz Ansari. He was from Parks and Rec, and he's the Indian dude, as he'd probably call himself, and so he does touch on a lot of issues about race, and he also gets to gender and sexuality as well, and it kind of at times is like a Louis, if you like Louis, but it's not as good as Louis. There are some problems with it, but it is pretty well done. But there are a lot of nice Easter eggs in season two for Criterion fans. I watched the first season trying to get to make sure I had some context. I actually don't think you need it. I think you could probably watch like the first couple episodes of the series, and you probably won't even like them, and then fast forward to season two. And actually, it ended okay. It wasn't terrific, but it was still pretty good, and I'll keep watching. So, all right, that's Master of None, and that's on Netflix, by the way.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, you can find the show on Twitter. No, you can't. I'm not going to talk about Twitter. Go to the Facebook group, Criterion Now. We talk about stuff there. You'll find us on the Criterion Cast Master Feed, and you'll find me on Twitter sometimes at AWest505. So, Jason, where can people find you online, or can people find you online?
They can. I mean, if they look for me. I'm on Twitter as Admiral Beamish. I'm in all of the, well, not all of them, but the main Criterion Facebook groups that we kind of kick around.
Yep.
And I write over at filmruminations.com.
Cool. And Kyle, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kyle_Reardon11, and you can find my film and my Kickstarter and all the information on my film at Run Nowhere for Nowhere to Run, my first feature film.
At Run Nowhere. Okay. And I'll put this all in the show notes, and I'll put the link to I'll find the link to your Kickstarter. I'm sure it's easy to find.
Right. Yeah, it's on my page. It's on the Twitter of my film too. The link's right there. So.
And, you know, it's too bad I didn't have you on earlier. I could have asked people to kick in some. I don't think I kicked in some. So it's closed, right?
We hit over our goal, so you're allowed to donate at any time after the fact, too. So
oh, cool.
It's all good.
It's all good. All right. Well, pleasure having you guys, and good show. Thanks again.
Great. Thanks
for having me.